Listeners, I welcome you to Afterthought. This week, we're reporting from the front of an ongoing war, a war that will shape the very face of culture to come. I speak naturally of Gamergate. I'm Jeff, and today John and I will lay it all out. From Anita to Zoe, we'll cover every detail and solve the whole shebang. Is it about harassing women? Is it about ethics in video game journalism? Find out on today's Afterthought. See, my whole problem is I don't know any of the lyrics to that song, so I just keep making it up in my head. So it's just like, and then she farts in a car, and then I sniff it on up.
See, the only lines I know from it are messed around with gender roles, and because you're so pretty. Oh, and also that she only comes when she's on top.
Which yeah.
Is, who does? That's weird.
Well, you know, sometimes, maybe.
I guess. Maybe that's the way that particular vagina works. That's fine, whatever. But specifically, it's whenever she's on top of a building and there are people below who are bothered by it. So she's... Really, she just comes because she's a jerk.
Yeah, well, maybe she only comes over when they're on top of a building.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever think about that? Well, no, it's when she's on top. So she only comes over when she's on top of a building.
Yeah.
So she's, like, driving a building around.
maybe she's in a helicopter.
This is the longest discussion ever had about the song Laid by James.
Yeah.
There it is. There it is, everybody. You're now aware that that song exists and that it has been discussed by someone. Tune in next week when we discuss Roll to Me.
All right. So let's discuss something that anyone might actually care about.
So this is Afterthought, the podcast that is the companion piece to System Mastery, where we just talk about whatever, and we answer fan questions. I'm Jeff, and my co-host John is here. How are you?
So good.
And this week we have actually quite a few fan questions, and we've been kind of at a loss about what we want to discuss this week.
Well, I think one of them makes a really good topic, both in conjunction with what we just reviewed, Witch Girls Adventures.
Witch Girls Adventures, that one.
Yeah.
That one right there on the shelf there. That's the one.
Oh, That Girl's Adventures.
Yeah. That's terrible. I'm sorry.
God, why would you ever do that? It's terrible.
It's terrible.
This is the worst.
These French fries are terrible. It's just a handful for the road. No, okay. So Witch Girls Adventures brought up a couple potential discussion points for us. Games made by people who are fetishy, and is that okay? And, well, you know, of course, I think it is, but, you know, whatever. Games for kids. Is there a good way to get a market for kids games out there? And there's actually something I want to talk about later that was recommended to us by a fan. But also, I think we found a question for us that'll work here. And this question comes to us from Nick E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I assume last name withheld is Cheese.
Nicky Cheese. Yeah, yeah. That's probably right. Yeah, Nick E is probably just a long-form version of his first name just being Nicky.
Probably.
Yeah, Nicky Cheese. Known gangster.
Known gangster. Hangs out at restaurant Cheese Dudes.
Oh, Cheese Dudes. We'll discuss Cheese Dudes later as well. That's our made-up restaurant that we own in our alter egos of... let's see, I'm Max, Max Headroom.
And I'm the Crow.
And we own a restaurant called Cheese Dudes.
Okay.
Anyway, the real question from Nick E. is, what can be done to create more diversity in gaming? Nerd stores and game tables are dominated by straight white men. Game systems like Monster Hearts have been praised for inclusive design, but I have a hard time getting excited about playing sexed-up high school Frankensteins unsure about their gender identity when I could be a badass space pirate. Nick E.
Yeah. So that's a really good question.
It's a great question, so thanks very much, Nikki. I mean, granted, the answer is probably, why the hell are you talking to us about video games? Get out there and whack that guy like you're told.
The big thing for me is, so, I also work in a game store, and the amount of times I hear just the worst shit out of some gamers in there.
Oh, God, I know. It's true. The industry is more or less just dominated by straight white guys. You go into a game store and that's what you see is a lot of samey looking guys. If you were to walk into the room we're recording in right now, you'd be like, oh, two role playing gamers. That's obvious.
Oh yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's one of those things where you hear someone talking about like, oh man, I don't want to play a bard because that's gay.
Oh God, that's the worst. There's something about bards, gnomes, and halflings that seems to set off the weirdo, or not the weirdo, because they're kind of mainstream for this horrible, horrible hobby that we're part of.
Oh, yeah.
But the people who are like, those things are for girls or are for gays. I've had some terrible gaming experiences where I've done that thing where you pull a flyer down and go, I'm going to play in this person's RPG game. And then you join it, and the first thing is like, oh, the first person you meet is a big gay orc baby in a poopy diaper. And I have to be like, DM I just met today, I'm actually bisexual and find that kind of inappropriate. He's like, well, okay, well then it's a bisexual orc in a diaper. I'm sorry. You must use the wrong term. Anyway, he wants to do you in the butt.
Yeah. And the sort of the cavalier nature of just throwing out offensive things about pretty much anything, mostly being horribly sexist and homophobic, but pretty much anything is par for the course for all, I'm not going to say most, but a lot.
Well, let's just put it this way. If you know nerds, then you know a table like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's that easy. It's kind of like the whole, I mean, I don't want to compare it to it because it's way not as big of a deal, but the statistic that if you know more than 5 women, you know at least 1 woman who's been sexually harassed. If you know more than 5 role-playing gamers, you know at least 1 who sits at a table where they say stuff like that.
Yeah. And it's the biggest issue for creating more diversity in gaming, I don't think lies as much in creating a game like Monster Hearts where you're like, oh, we're going to try to appeal to like people who enjoy the monster romance fiction and we want to get those Twilight people to start playing RPGs.
Right, and it's not like those games haven't already existed for quite a while. I mean, that's basically what White Wolf is. Your excuse to play sexy vampires.
Oh, yeah, and it's not like any given, like, gay or female or anyone else gamer doesn't want to play a badass space pirate.
No, and that's, I think that's actually the best part of this question is, you know, I don't want to play a Frankenstein that's unsure of his gender identity, which is, you know, one of the things I want to say is that Monster Hearts is actually a fantastic game.
Oh, yeah. It's well put together. It's got a lot of awesome little bits to it.
There's a reason you've never heard us talk about it before. We try to stick to bad games.
Yeah.
And so Monster Hearts is an awesome game, but you know, if you want to play a badass game where you're playing a badass, then I agree. I think that sort of thing should be more inclusive. The problem is that it's really not something you can fix with a book. It's really more of a culture shift issue.
Yeah, there's just not a good enough space for people to come into where you go, I feel 100% certain that if I sit down at this table, the other people I'm playing with aren't going to be horrible. Like, I'm a white straight man. Mm-hmm. And when I sit down at a table, I'm still kind of unsure if I've never played with them before, whether these people are going to be awful, and they're not even going to be awful at me.
No, like, it's just they're going to be awful near worry. You. And the problem is that then you feel like, oh my God, these are strangers, but then the nerd social fallacy kicks in and you don't want to be like, hey guys, stop doing that. That's inappropriate. But, and I've had this problem where I've played, with a card mat that's got, you know, a sexy guy on it and people are like, ew, that's queer. And I'm like, yeah, me too. And then they just stop talking. It's like, oh my gosh, this is the worst. Why am I in this store? Oh yeah, because it's the only store.
Yeah, that's the other problem is game stores are so few and far between, especially in places that aren't like a big city or any sort of metropolitan area. If you live anywhere that's even remotely rural and you can find a game store, that's it. That's what you have. That one game store.
Right.
Which means every nerd or anyone who's even remotely interested in nerdy stuff is going to be there. And generally the people who are the most offensive are also the loudest about how awful they think.
And they're also the ones that are always there.
Yeah.
So, honestly, I'm not sure what the real answer to this is. I feel like it's changing with or without those old gamers. I feel like the crusty old gay-hating gamers... The problem is that it's two fronts. You got the crusty olds... And then you also have everybody who's 15.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same Xbox dilemma of like, it's like asking how do we get more diversity in first person shooters in that, well, maybe if people weren't horrible and making rape threats the first time they find out someone's a woman in an FPS, there would be more.
Yeah. Well, but there's still positives here. Inclusiveness has been growing in gaming every year.
Oh, yeah.
Forever. I mean, we're at the point now where it's not amazing to see a girl sitting down at a role-playing game table.
Well, it's no longer, this is the token female at the table.
Yeah, I've seen tables that are half and half or more. split along gender lines, and it's nice. It's nice to see that kind of inclusiveness develop. So it's happening slowly on its own, but as to things that are fixing it, I feel like the internet's doing a lot here. Playing online or playing, like mostly just playing online or by post has become a thing where you can play and not have to worry about it. But even then, that's not really a solution.
Well, no. But then, I mean, the nice thing with the play online or by post is no one can see you, so it doesn't matter. They can just interact with whatever the character is. But
even then, that's not a solution. You're still playing with some racist or something.
And I think one of the other things is when you aren't just, like, I have to go to one specific game store or whatever, and that's all I can choose from. When you can choose from people online, anyone who you know is a complete asshole, you don't have to play with them. And before it was, okay, well, if I want to play at this store, I've got to play with this guy, and he's a huge dick.
Yeah.
But if I want to play, I have to play with him, because he's always there. Now you can go, great, I'll play online with people that aren't assholes, and now I don't have to do that.
But I feel like the best thing to do is address game store owners. And truthfully, the problem is that a lot of game store owners are valuing customers based on their, you know, 6 degrees of connection to Gygax. You know, oh, this guy's from the 70s, and he knows everything about first edition D&D, and he makes a great person to have in my store and play games back there in the corner. This isn't true. That guy never buys anything.
Oh, no. Most of the regulars at a store are going to be there every single day and spend maybe a dollar getting a soda out of a machine or something, and other than that, they're just sitting there being, I don't know, taking up space.
Yeah, so the real solution is that store owners need to recognize that people like that, people, not just old-school gamers, because we like old-school gamers too, but people who are toxic to the industry, who would be toxic to any other store industry, are also toxic to the game store industry.
Oh yeah. Well, when someone comes in and goes, okay, I want to get a game, I'm thinking about picking up whatever, and you've got some guy who's always in there, and he comes up and goes, you don't want to buy that. That's... and then just goes off about WoW for babies. Obviously, you want to go up to that guy as an owner of a store and be like, you need to shut your goddamn mouth.
I've had that happen at your store. Where a guy came up to me when I was trying to buy that little small box of Space Marines because I wanted to do some test paints. And he's like, don't you buy that box of Space Marines. That box is a ripoff. You need to either buy the great big box or just not buy that box. And I was like, yeah, but I only want to paint 2 Space Marines because I'm doing a test print. So I don't even play this army. Just, can I buy this? He's like, that's terrible. If you don't buy that, I'll give you 2 Space Marines. And then your store owner came through and enforced him. He's like, if you're going to cost me a sale, you go get him 2 Space Marines.
Oh, yeah. And that's the nice thing about at least the store owner at the place I'm at is he's got his shit together, he'll come out and tell someone to shut up if they're being an asshole.
And that's the solution. You need to have better control by the people who actually run the store. And there's more than that. I mean, another problem that we mentioned a little earlier but didn't really fill out on is the whole geek social fallacy thing. When someone sitting at your table is just going, oh, gays, women, blah, 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 you need to call them out. Everyone needs to call these people out. I mean, I know the internet's become a big bastion of call-out culture, but game stores could definitely be a place that could stand to be improved by this.
Yeah, I think the game store that you're going to go to where you're thinking about, okay, I want to be with these people playing whatever game, and I don't want to call anyone out on anything because then I might not be able to play. There's a thing that I've said on some articles that I've written, and I've seen it online a whole bunch, which is, no game is better than a bad game. So it would be way better to just not play at all than to play with people that are actually toxic.
It's absolutely true. You're having a negative experience, why are you there? It's a game, you're supposed to be having fun. Also, no game is better than a bad game is a perfect slogan for our show.
It's true.
So anyway.
That's going on the shirt.
No game is better than a bad game. Come to Cheese Dudes. ultimately, I'm not sure that we're necessarily the best people in the world to solve this. All I can say is that for our own bona fides, we are very inclusive gamers.
Oh yeah, and I think the other thing, the other half of that question where it was saying like, oh, you know, I'd rather be a badass space pirate than a Frankenstein is, we need to also not think of only girls or queers would want to play as a high school student. Because then you go, if someone comes up and says, hey, I want to buy the new Star Wars RPG. And you go, oh, you don't want that. Obviously, you want to get, like, girly school adventures, because you're a girl. Please don't actually buy this. You're not going to like it, because this is for badasses.
Well, yeah, every game is for everybody, and that's fine.
Oh, yeah.
Unless it's like a pony game, and in which case it's for nobody.
Pony games. Pony games?
Also Starfleet, which is exclusively for Dan.
Well, I mean, it's mostly aimed at Dan.
It's primarily aimed at Dan. To get this joke, please consult episode 4 of System Mastery.
Yeah. So, I think really that's going to mostly boil down to have a culture that isn't awful and try to make your culture less awful if you can.
Yeah. Don't feel like you're beholden to play in the one environment that you have access to. If your local gaming store isn't a good space, if you feel like you're having a tough time there because people are some kind of homophobic or sexist or anything along those lines, branch out. Play in coffee houses. Play at your own house. Play in libraries. The truth is there's this whole stigma attached to being seen in public with a role-playing game. Like, I know that I don't like reading them when I'm at lunch at work, because then people come up and go, "What's that? Oh, that's similar to the D&D. You must like dolls or something." And it's always weird the conclusions they jump to.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's also always, "My nephew plays the D&Ds.
Yeah.
He likes whatever. Do you like whatever?" I'm like, no. Also, I don't know him. Not every gamer knows every other gamer.
I know. So, just broaden that space out. Take the books out on the... Play in the park. Play wherever you have to get away from toxic culture. And eventually, if enough people are doing this, it will damage the bottom lines of stores, and the stores will change their policies.
Yeah. If it becomes unprofitable for people to be huge assholes, then it is amazing how motivated you will be to not be an asshole when there's money involved.
Absolutely. You want to move on to another one of these questions?
Yeah, sure, let's do it.
Okay. So, next question was the first one we picked up this week, and it comes to us from Josh Whitson. And it's two-parter. As a GM, what is your ideal player like? And as a player, what is your ideal GM like?
All right, well, let's tackle the first one first. As a GM, my ideal player. As a GM, I want a player that is engaged, first and foremost. If there's a player that...
Especially if they're living in sin and they are...
I need them to at least be engaged.
Yeah.
Give me a promise ring. Something.
Anything along those lines. If you're having sex out of wedlock, then...
You get out of my game.
That's not our table, sir. Okay, so you want a player that's engaged in the game.
I want someone that's going to pay attention. Like, if you've got someone that's just got their phone out and they're fucking around and then you go... Hey, do you want to maybe participate? And they're like, tell me when combat happens. Then I just don't want that. I want someone that wants to put effort into a background, into a character. You know, if I want to play a game where it's just, hey, we're going to run around and murder hobo and kill a bunch of things. Like, I can do that in a board game. I want at least some role-playing in my role-playing game.
Sure. Okay, I like a player who recognizes that games are a team effort. And that you don't really need to build a protagonist for an RPG. That you're really talking about a group of four protagonists with four individual stories. So when someone shows up to a gaming table and says, well, my character is, let's say, the king of space, and also has every spell and a magic laser sword. And I'm just like, why did you do that? What you need to leave ground for everybody. Because once you get to that point, you can really kind of build a symphony going. And there'll be stories, and there'll be hooks for every single player. It's bad to try and build your character. In my eyes, it's bad to build your character to be like, I grab every hook. I'm also going to run this party.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, when you get a player that is like, I've shored up every weakness so I can do literally everything. And then you look at the rest of the table and someone's like, well, I specialized in whatever because that's what my character does. You go, that's great. I also do that. You're not allowed to have any time in the spotlight.
I think part of this for me boils down to how I like to play board games. You know how in board games, especially collaborative board games, you often find that one player that's like the armchair quarterback of the game?
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, okay, I can't wait to play this Escape from the Horrible Island game. And there's one guy that's like, it's like, okay, if you do this and you do this and you do that, then I'll do this and this, and then we'll be done with this turn. It's like, well, I wanted to choose what I'm doing. Well, you could if you wanted to be a suboptimal doofus.
Yeah. And I think that's a main issue with a lot of players that I have a problem with as a GM is someone who's going to come to the game with, I know how we should do things, and I'm going to tell everyone how they should do things.
Yeah. And I'm not a huge... I mean, I'm not... I'm looking for the right word here. I don't hate metagaming. I'm not going to be the sort of GM that wants his players to have never read the books.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm fine with any level of metagaming. I don't even mind a lot of table chatter because, again, it's a game. I'm there to have a good time.
Yeah.
So really, all I want, just like you, I want a player who's engaged. I want a player that knows the value of building around a team and actually having fun with a group of people. And because we just answered that other question for 15 minutes, I want a player who's not a gross racist sexist or anything like that.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was a gay woman.
Oh, yeah. If possible, I'd like a proud Cherokee woman to be a... Let's go on. No.
Yeah, I think that would be ideal. As a player that wants to not fuck up your game.
Yeah. Okay. As a player, what do you like in a GM? Oh, one last thing about the GM of it in players. As a GM, do you like a player that will touch your pizza?
No. No player should touch a GM's pizza.
No, absolutely not. You are correct. If the pizza is touched by a player, that player's character should suffer a horrible fate, or the player should go read from a dictionary.
Yeah, for at least maybe
two
a
letters.
Half hour.
Let's say two letters.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. All right. Oh, and not Q. No, Q or X. You have to do real letters.
This ain't amateur hour.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you like in your GMs?
As a player, I like a GM that is flexible. If they can do the splits during a game, that's perfect.
I was going to jump right down on that, but I figured you were. I already went with engaged.
And, yeah, yeah, I know. Come on. So if a GM is going to railroad everything as hard as possible, that's annoying to me. I want someone that can respond to a player's input. If as a player I go, oh, my character wants to do muh, and he didn't plan for it, a GM that can come up with something on the fly, and it doesn't have to be like, oh, and here's an entire new adventure just for you. Just a way that you can come up with anything on the fly to react instead of just going, oh, you want to do that? Nothing happens. Anyway, getting back to my adventure.
You hear a voice from God that says you need to go into the dungeon.
Yeah. Being able to engage your players is a big help when they want to do something. Because obviously, it's what your players want to do, and if you just shut that down, then your players aren't having fun.
Yeah, and there's a balance to this. I mean, I played with a guy once who was obsessed with the fact that we were playing in the Faerun world, Forgotten Realms. And so when our DM started us, and he started us in like Daggerdale or something, he's like, you guys are in Daggerdale. One of our players immediately announced, I will walk northwest.
Huh.
Like, why? Because I would like to go to Baldur's Gate. Now, I'm not sure if I have that direction right, so please, by all means, correct me. But his goal was to just leave the campaign setting and go somewhere else because he knew the map of Faerun really well. And that's just a dick move.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a balance.
Well, at that point you go, great, that character leaves. You can roll up a new character anyway.
Yeah. Do you have a character that wants to stay in Daggerdale and fight these kobolds? Because that's what's happening.
Yeah. And again, that's at least responding to the player instead of just going, no, you can't do that.
There's a huge invisible wall.
Yeah, you can just go, all right, you leave. Your character is gone. We're not dealing with him anymore. Okay.
So there you go. And as a player, I like a GM that provides pizza that I can touch.
So you like an impossibility is what you like.
Yes, I do. And I don't want to eat the pizza. I just want to touch it.
Yeah, I just want to feel that glory.
Yeah, I just want to get a little grease.
That cheesy glory.
Yeah, I just want a little grease.
Come on
fingers.
Down to Cheese Dudes for Cheesy Glory Hour.
There's a little bit of peanut butter in every ice cube.
We get that peanut butter flavor in your water so you can enjoy your Cheese Dudes the way God intended.
You ever want to explain to these people what Cheese Dudes are?
No, never. That'll be in a different afterthought inside the joke explaining our dumb jokes that no one understands.
Okay. All right, next question. This one comes to us from Jeff Chaffee at Infocorn. So Jeff Chaffee asks us, of you two, who's Crow and who's Servo?
Well, obviously I'm Crow.
Okay, and then obviously I myself am Crow.
Yeah.
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 So I think we're set there. We're both Crow.
Yeah.
Neither of us is Tom Servo.
No, that would be terrible.
Yeah, so... I'm Crow because I'm frequently wrong about things and I'm unnecessarily loud in situations that don't require it. Plus, I'm stylish.
Yeah, and I'm Crow because I'm the funny one.
That's mean. First of all, Tom Servo is also a funny one.
And I am Crow because I wear all black and white face paint and black face paint on top of that, and I fight gangsters who killed me.
Oh, right, and I'm Tom Servo because I'm a talking CGI head in a box. Voiced, created by Matt Frewer.
Yeah,
of course.
Obviously.
Wait, that's Max Headroom again. I keep pulling back to that well.
cheese dudes!
Jesus. This is going to be the worst episode. We have to explain what cheese dudes are. So, anyway, neither of us is Tom Servo, and both of us are Crow.
There you go. Two crows.
I would go as far as to say I might be a Mike, except that I know that guy's kind of a Republican.
And I think I'm probably TV's Frank.
Yeah, TV's Frank's a pretty good one to be. I mean, you enjoy oversized lollipops, yes?
Obviously.
Yeah.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. So there you go. You could easily be a TV's Frank, and I'll be,
Bobo.
Or Ortega. Pulling deep. Chest fist slam.
There you go. I am Big McLarge Huge, and you are Roll Fizzle Beef.
Perfect. There's the answer to your question. See, I don't even really think of Tom and Crow as being, like, a universal one and the other thing. You know, like are you chocolate, or which one of you is chocolate, and which one of you is vanilla, that sort of thing? Crow and Servo aren't polar opposites. They're part of a unique symphony of awesome.
Yeah, it's like Statler and Waldorf. None of them really has a particularly distinct personality from the other one.
Well, that's true. They both have a lot of similar personality traits, but Crow is a little bit more arrogant, and Tom Servo is a little bit more,
country?
Yeah, a little more country, where Mike is a little rock and roll.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's not. He's from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Gypsy is a little rock and roll.
Mike is a little more cheese dudes coming from Wisconsin.
Oh my god, you're never gonna let the cheese. I'm explaining them right now.
Don't you do it. Don't you tell them what the joke is.
Our next question comes to us from Jonathan Lepetin at I Love Chrissia. And he asks, ever played a no/low magic fantasy setting? How was it? What system do you think does magic better than D&D's do everything system?
A no magic fantasy setting, no. Because basically every fantasy RPG that's out there, if it's a fantasy RPG, pretty much has magic in it.
Or something that's basically magic.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem is the word fantasy's in there. If it did have the word fantasy, then we could always pull to the wells of things like, I played D20 Modern without the magic system turned on.
So. Yeah, I mean, there are games that don't have magic, but basically as soon as you get into fantasy, people immediately go, if it's a fantasy setting, it has magic.
I mean, my understanding is that we have one. We have a game that we will do sometime in the future that is a fantasy setting with no magic.
Oh, yeah. And it's interesting. Haven't played it yet, but it essentially a no or low magic fantasy setting ends up just becoming a, I don't know. Most of them, I assume, would just be a shit farmer simulator. But it's going to be heavily into the whole medieval, I wear a certain type of armor and use a certain type of weapon, and, you know, instead of magic, we've got people who are like, I don't know, maybe I create alchemists' fire
and
shit.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that usually there's something that's magic, even if it's not, you know, magic. It'll be something like, oh, there's psionics.
Oh, yeah, there's going to be something where it's like, oh, I've created a weird, like, fantasy version of technology, and I have a ray gun, so instead of fireball, I shoot you with this gun.
Right, so it's tricky. Now, Jonathan, if you've got one you want us to talk about, by all means, send it in. It's just not something we've really encountered yet. We have one. We do have one. We'll cover it pretty soon here. Okay.
But systems that do magic better than D&D is many of them.
I can't really think. I mean, the problem is, D&D's magic system's good. It's a good magic system. The problem is that it's way too big.
Yeah, it's the do-everything system.
Yeah.
If you siloed it off a little more,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the only siloing you get is cleric or wizard, and after that, you're just
sort
of...
Schools and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you had gone, all right, literally you're playing as an evoker. You only get evocation spells.
Mm-hmm.
So making it even more restricted than the just you pick something you're good at and one thing you're not good at.
I think... Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, yeah. It's just with the D&D setting, because you can mix and match everything... You basically get the power of being a multi-classed person by just being the basic, wizard. Like, a fighter who's like, I'm a fighter, but I also want to be able to, like, punch things unarmed, and I'd like to be able to use magic devices and things like that. He go, oh, well, now I've got to get levels of rogue and monk. But a wizard's like, I want to be a wizard, but I also want to be able to fly and shoot fireballs and hold people in, like, yeah, tentacles. And,
or even cast a spell that makes me a better fighter than a fighter is for a while.
Yeah, it's
whatever. Even, why would you do that, of course? Why would you lower yourself to using the bad system? You still can. It's in there.
Yeah, the problem is it covers doing everything, so that's the main issue, is everything does everything.
Now,
if you had a caster that was, I have spells that let me sort of be like a rogue,
mm-hmm,
and that stepped on the rogue's toes, but it's all they could do, then you'd essentially just be replacing your rogue with an ultimate wizard rogue.
Yeah. Now, I think the funny thing is, we're clearly talking about D&D's magic setting as of every edition but one. And I feel like the one edition has a really good magic system that's nicely siloed off and it can't do everything.
And it's fourth edition. It's God's edition.
We aren't going to get involved in the edition wars because...
Because they're over.
Because they're over.
Because D&D Next came out and now it's our true savior.
Yeah. But 4th edition D&D actually does a great job of saying, okay, what's a wizard do? Wizards use their spells to control the battlefield. Here's a bunch of spells that control the battlefield and do some damage.
Yeah.
Perfect. You solved the puzzle. So, I mean, again, I don't want to get involved in the edition war, but I feel like that was actually a really solid way to make it happen.
But then you have other ones like more of the story game type things where you get into the, like, world or fate systems where you go, what's magic do? Basically anything you'd be able to do anyway, but you say it's magic.
Yeah, I hesitate to even call those magic systems. They're more just like magic. Like, so you give everybody a hammer and the wizard's hammer is just labeled magic.
I mean, you can do basically different things in how you describe it. So yeah. It gives you...
It changes your stunt toolkit.
Yeah, it gives you different role-playing opportunities.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take agency away from anyone else, and it doesn't take anything that someone else could do and say, I'd do it better.
What would you say is your favorite magic system? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, God.
Is it Witch Girl's Adventures?
Probably.
Yeah, there's a lot of spells in that book.
There are, I mean, at least a couple dozen spells in that book.
Most of them are for turning things into other things against their will.
Mostly.
How did we not notice that?
I think probably the spell system that I've enjoyed the most is a game where you don't... thing is, a game where you don't use magic specifically as just magic. Like, if you're doing something like an old White Wolf system where everyone has their own abilities that are tied into things, so whether it's, I have, like, say I'm playing Vampire and I'm a Tremere and I have for realsies Thaumaturgy magic, or I'm a fucking Brujah who's running around with potence, and it's basically just punch magic is all I've got.
Sure.
It's still magic abilities, and I like the fact that you just sort of go, did you invest into something? Then your magic expresses itself in that way.
Right. Now, I'm a big fan. I want to say magic systems where you get to choose various aspects and then use them to build spells, but that still have hard limits. And I'm sure, because I've only played the game a couple times long, long ago, I'm sure I'm about to be corrected by a bunch of people for how bad it is, but I like Shadowrun's magic system, where it's just like you can do a bolt or a beam or a ball or a wall or spray, and then you get to choose what it's made of, like it's made out of stun or it's made out of blast, and then it does the amount of damage equivalent to the amount of mana you put into it, and have fun.
Yeah. And at that point, it just becomes a game of how much do I want to put into any given thing I'm casting.
Right. And the nice thing is it's relatively simple, because there are other games we've encountered, Dark Earth is a good example of this, where the spellcasting system is more like pick and choose from a variety of parts and pastiche your spell together out of all this stuff. And then you realize that's even bigger than a D&D magic system, because wizard, it's your turn. What do you do?
Hold on, I gotta figure out what the difficulty level, if I go 3 points into this, 1 point into that, 4 points into that, 2 points into this, no points in that, and you end up coming out with this thing where whoever's playing the caster in that system has to sit there with a calculator at all times, just figuring out what they can do.
Yeah, so I think that there's a nice middle ground in there. I also really like 4th edition's magic system.
Yes. And the fact that, again, 4th edition made its ritual magic open to everyone.
Yes, so that anyone could cast. And then they even went ahead, when that wasn't good enough, and created martial practices, which aren't very good, because there aren't very many of them. But it's rituals that don't say ritual on them, so you can feel good about casting them when you're a big beef fighter.
Yeah. After you're done shouting someone's hand back on, you can go ahead and use this ritual.
Bring warlords back, Merles.
Where's the supplement?
He won't. He literally hates warlords. That's the one thing he doesn't like is warlords, because of the whole shouting hands back on thing.
Jag off.
I know. Honestly, Warlord was the best thing about 4th edition. Whether you loved or hated the whole everyone's got powers thing, the whole healing surges thing, wherever you stood on those, Warlords are awesome.
Warlords are 100% the best thing to come out of that game.
I know. And that's the reason why I'm not a 5th edition booster. I would be on board with that fairly simple, not very well put together game that sucks if they'd also put in some crappy Warlords that were just called Warlords so I could still feel good about them. Oh. Anyway, next question. Shall we?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I'm sorry, this question comes to us from Donnie Sababo, who I assume is a pizza vendor.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, of course, right? Yeah.
Sababo's pizza is so good.
Yeah, I'm sure he's never heard that joke.
Never, in his life.
Yeah. Okay, first, do you guys have a list of RPGs that you won't review for one reason or another, and is it composed of specific titles, or is it composed of less specific categories? Another question is, what is the weirdest or worst role-playing game system that each of you has actually sat down and played, and why?
So the list of what we won't review is mostly things that are currently popular and played.
There's a couple things here. I think that it's both individual names and categories. The individual names, I'm going to say, is Fatal.
Yeah.
We don't want to review Fatal.
We just don't want to.
I don't want to read it. Maybe we'll do it for like our 100th and 101st episodes or something, but don't hold your breath because it's just unpleasant. And
yeah.
It works as an example of something that you shouldn't even bother reading. That's good enough for us. And then categories, and there's a few things that we're going to put into categories here. The categories will include things that are very current and very popular, things that are people's favorite games, things that are good, basically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when it comes down to, oh, you should review, like, Eclipse Phase, and we're like, it's popular and new, we're not going to do that.
I feel like we are. It's our number one requested game. Did you know that, Eclipse Phase?
I know it is, because it's new and popular.
I know, but it's also weird and bad. It's got a bunch of weird bad... It's called Eclipse Phase... assuming I'm thinking of the right thing, it's the one where you play as children that have to repopulate the Earth because all the adults fell asleep and won't wake up. I'm thinking something else.
Bliss Stage.
Oh, shoot, you're right. Eclipse Phase and Bliss Stage are two different things.
Eclipse Phase is the sci-fi in space shenanigans one.
Oh, well, then I feel better, because Bliss Stage is our most requested RPG.
Oh, why?
Because it's weird and creepy and pedo-y, and we're going to make a lot of fun of it eventually.
Oh, good. Wonderful.
Yeah, so there you go. That's why. Other ones would include... We're not a huge fan of the idea of reviewing fan games that are submitted by the person who wrote them.
Oh yeah, if you've got your own game that's like, hey, I've got a rough draft of a game that I'm going to want to publish at some point, don't give it to us.
And again, this isn't because we don't want to read them. You're welcome to send them to us, and we're probably the worst people to send them to, because we have a very tight schedule of reading RPGs constantly. But you can send them to us, but we don't want to make fun of them. I mean, ultimately, we've had complaints about how the show is universally negative, but there's a reason for that. It's funnier. And we don't want to be mean to you. We like our fans, and we don't want to rip on their games.
The other thing is, if we review a game that literally you can't get a hold of and doesn't exist outside of your rough draft, then this means nothing to anyone else.
There's that. That doesn't even bother me that much, because some of the games we reviewed are like, no one has this.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you technically could.
You could find it, yeah. To me, it's not necessarily the thrust of the game. So those are a couple categories that we don't want to review. Games that are from fans, we'd love to read them, but we probably aren't going to discuss them on the game or show. And stuff that's new and popular, just because, again, we don't want to get into a whole lot of wars over games that are probably really good.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's the majority. Now, weirdest and worst role-playing games that each of us have actually sat down and played, and why? I am going to go with a game called The Immortal Wars. I believe it may have also had the word Himsati stuck in the title somewhere.
Huh.
And it was a game where you played immortals that were like the worst kind of hippie gods. Like Himsati is like the Sanskrit word for animal spirit. And that gives you an idea of what it was. Like, it was one of those games, too, where all the rules were in the middle of paragraphs of rosy prose. So trying to figure out how to play it was just impossible.
Oh, yeah. And Rosie Prose was just the worst actress from the 90s. I mean, that accent, come on.
She's really good on White Men Can't Jump. I'm sorry, White Men Can't Jump. As long as we're... okay. So, yeah, John, what would you say is the worst game you've ever played?
It's kind of a toss-up. I mean, I have a place in my heart for it that I love, but the Marvel role-playing game, the old one, is really bad. Like, it's just really, really bad.
You know, I mentioned on Twitter recently, because my old computer was destroyed, that our pilot episode, which is a review of Marvel Heroes, that old deep percentile game, has been destroyed. We no longer have it.
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, we can't put it up anymore. I was planning to put it up for like our 50th episode or something, and be like, listen to us, and we didn't know what we were talking about. 30 minutes of this episode is us talking about what games we play. Huh. So unfortunately it's been destroyed, but yeah, that game it's something else.
It's such an amount of garbage, and everything in there, like, I love it because I love random tables, and everything has a random table.
Yeah.
But the problem is, you end up with just the most garbage, terrible people. You're like, what are you? I'm a sentient computer. I can't go on the internet or anything. I'm just a actual desktop computer that is sentient, and I control plants weekly. Yeah. And
also, and by weekly, I mean not very well. I don't mean I can do it once a week.
And I've got weather control that is limited to only around me, so I can make it rain on my tower and fry myself.
Right.
That also, is my character.
Also, I can fire lasers from my, hang on, rolling for it, feet.
Oh. Oh, all right.
All right. So that game's got, I've played it as well, and it's super fun, but it's terrible. It's not very well.
No, it qualifies for both weird and worst in that if you just go with it, you end up with terrible, dumb things. But if everyone's on board for being awful,
what was
it's
your
wonderful.
Character the last time we played that? Mine was the God of Owls.
Oh, I was running it.
Yeah. Okay.
And we had our buddy Russ, who joined us for the EverQuest podcast we did.
Yeah.
He was playing as essentially Bro Swamp Thing.
That's right. He was Bro Swamp Thing and the God of Owls, Russia Fraternity.
Yeah, that was the adventure. I ran the adventure of superheroes rushing a super fraternity, and it was the worst.
Super fun, though.
Oh, it was super fun. But
it was
just
a perfect
terrible.
Example of games are as good as the amount of fun the players are willing to extract from what they're doing. So, yeah. Okay. So there you go. You said it was a toss up. What was your other one?
Well, I mean, the other one is probably going to be GURPS, because GURPS is garbage, and I hate everyone ever.
You know, speaking of, the reason that you don't like GURPS, I'm assuming, is because it's a mechanics-intensive game.
Well, it's all min-max all the time. It is 100% system mastery. That's all the game is.
So for our next question, shall we just jump right into it? This one comes to us from Kurt S. And again, I'm guessing Sutter. I assume that this is from the acclaimed writer and producer of the Sons of Anarchy franchise. So, yeah, thanks. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Thank you, Kurt.
Sorry your shows are terrible. I mean... I mean,
oh,
we get it. We get it. It's Hamlet with motorcycles. Fine. Two seasons.
It's good. Let's alienate these Sons of Anarchy listeners that we have.
Oh, I'm sorry. I really enjoyed Sons of Anarchy, especially because it's got Leela in it.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. She's great. Okay. How do you get new players interested in playing a very mechanics-intensive game?
It's not something you can really just force. If a player is someone that likes mechanics, they like playing with the fiddly little bits of a system, they're someone that, outside of a role-playing game, would be the type of person who's like, oh yeah, I love playing in like MMOs where I'm trying to maximize my DPS and I'm really interested in fiddly little plus ones and minus ones. Then if you present them with a mechanics-intensive game, even if they don't have the system mastery coming in, they're going to be more likely to want to invest and get that system mastery.
Sure. I'd say pick some of the fun games that are in that vein. Let's say Star Wars Edge of the Empire. It's got that huge pile of random dice you have to learn how to use. So that's a game that's got a lot of interesting system mechanics, a lot of interesting stuff. I don't know that it's necessarily a fiddly game, but the dice math is very confusing and complicated. But it's still fun. It's fun and fast, and it's easy to bring people into it.
And if it's mechanics intensive, you need to, for a new player, to get them interested, give them a small selection.
Yeah.
Don't just be like, here's everything you could possibly do. Go at it. It's the same thing, like, if you wanted to introduce someone to Magic the Gathering, you just went, here's all 20,000 billion cards that they have ever printed. Make a deck. That would be daunting and terrible. But if you said, hey, here's a pre-constructed deck and a few packs, and you can make something out of that.
All you need to do is pick a color.
Yeah, just go, hey man, what do you like to play like? I want to play aggressive. Here's a red deck.
Sorry about that.
In the same way, if you've got a mechanics-intensive game, and you go, hey, what kind of characters do you like? And they go, I want someone that's really good with guns. You can go, here are the mechanics that revolve around shooting people.
Yeah, don't bother reading the magic section.
Just be like, okay, anything that has to do with driving or magic or whatever, just don't even give them that section. Just let them get interested in the one part that you know they already want.
Sure. Now, personally, I wouldn't recommend it at all, because I like starting new players off on games that aren't super system intensive, but I'm assuming that this is the sort of question that's revolving around someone who has an ongoing, you know, intensive game, like a GURPS game or something, and they've had trouble in the past with integrating new players.
Yeah, so. And I mean, there's... it depends on how you want to define new player. If you mean new player as in new to your game, then, like I said, just giving them a slice of the mechanics until they can understand everything is fine. If you mean a new player, like they've never played a role-playing game before, give them a pre-generated character, tell them how they roll, and just let them do that, because if you, even just letting them get a, like, part of the mechanics, if they're a new player and aren't someone that's generally interested in mechanics-heavy systems, they're going to go cross-eyed and not care anymore.
You've heard us make fun of the section at the beginning of RPG books before that's, you know, are you new to RPGs? Well, welcome to Haven City of Violence. It's like, this is not a game that you should have picked up first.
Yeah.
This is advanced, Mark.
So, yeah, if you really want to get someone into your game, also, you can run a mechanics light version of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of games that come with multiple versions built right into the book for easy play for beginners.
Oh yeah, and I mean, even games that are ridiculously complex, you can boil it down to, here's how the base mechanics work, usually. So like, if you're playing, say, Warhammer 40k, you can go, you know what, I'm just gonna say, you always hit on a 4, you always wound on a 4, you always save on a 4, I'm just gonna get you the mechanics of how to move and distances and everything down first before we get into every dumb fiddly bit that exists in this game. So, you can do that with some games where you go, alright, here's GURPS, it's got a bajillion different modifiers and ways to build your character, and the whole, like, merits flaws system is stupendously huge. But instead of doing that, just tell me what kind of character you want to have, I'll boil it down to the most simple version of that as I can, and then you can just play that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's all the questions we have for the week.
Sweet!
Great, so let's do a little housekeeping for System Mastery and Afterthought. We're proud to announce, we're really thrilled about this, our Patreon hit its second goal yesterday.
Woo!
So we are now at $50 per episode, which is amazing. We can't thank you enough. You've been huge helps to us. With that, we're going to be able to pay all of our server hosting fees. We'll be able to expand space, which is good, because we recently doubled our output of podcast hosting.
Yeah, and maybe we'll be able to record on something that doesn't look like a reject from a 60s sci-fi film.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, you know what? I just realized we actually have one more question from the fans.
Oh?
And this one comes from a lot of different fans, so I didn't bother writing down the names, but the question was, it's specifically for you, and it's, John, what are cheese dudes?
Well, that's an interesting question. You can find us at systemmastery@gmail.com, System Mastery on Twitter, or System Mastery on Facebook. Go ahead, drop us a line if you've got any questions, if you want to know anything, and we'll be sure to answer it to the best of our ability.
Yeah.
We've got plenty of new stuff coming up. We've got more Afterthought, more of the System Mastery main podcast.
Mm-hmm. Which we'll have a hint right now for you for what next week's episode is all about, and your hint is going to be, let's say, two heads. That's your hint for next week.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Okay, so otherwise, as he said, you can send in questions for us to answer on Afterthought episodes. Send those to systemmastery@gmail.com or tweet them to System Mastery. Otherwise, visit our podcast, systemmasterypodcast.com.
What? Cheese dudes.
Good lord.
Suck it, listeners!
Thanks for... God damn it. Thanks for listening, and have a lovely week.